Making your way on back. Shelly, since you're up there, if anybody needs a handout, would you give them one if you would? We're in Proverbs chapter 3 tonight. We are on schedule, believe it or not. We're on schedule and continuing to go right through. If you need a handout, you didn't get one on the way in, Shelly has one. Lift your hand if you would. New one, not the same one from last week. That's what I'm saying. We're on schedule. So, Lord willing, you'll need a new one every time that we get together. So tonight we're in Proverbs 3 this evening as we continue our study in the book of Proverbs together. Doesn't it seem like there are some texts of the Bible which have application only to a certain group of people? For example, if you come to Ephesians chapter 5, and in Ephesians chapter 5 you see this instruction about, well, being a dad, and you're not a dad, you might look at that text and say, well, you know, that application, there's going to be a whole lot of application there for pastor, but there's not going to be any for me because I'm not a dad. Or in the same text, if you're a woman but you don't have a husband, or if you're a man but you don't have a wife, that particular text, you might look at that and say, well, you know, that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with me. Have you ever approached a text like that? You've read a text and you thought, well, you know, I'm past that. I'm not a mom anymore. And that verse talks about parenting, so I've moved beyond that. The text that we're considering tonight is one of those texts where every believer, in every situation, in all times, in all places, what I like to say, here and there, then and now, every one of them looks to this particular text. And we all say, oh yeah, that text applies to me. And it's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. How many of you at some point in the past put that text to memory? Intentionally or unintentionally? Well, you know, the vast majority of you. And there was probably a reason that you put it to memory. Because you saw in there something very crucial to your Christian life. In just a moment, we'll get to that text. Let's quote the one that we're memorizing together. It's Proverbs 1, verse 7. Now, by the way, I will tell you, next week, I'm gonna call on one or two people. We'll see if anybody comes back next week. I'm going to call on one or two people to quote Proverbs 1, 7 next week from memory. You've had 4 weeks now to put it to memory. So this is the fifth week tonight, our fifth week of study. So you've had at least 4 weeks to put it to memory. So let's quote it together. We'll say the reference, and then we'll say the verse together. And next week, if I remember to ask you, and if you remember to memorize it, we'll hear a few of you quote the text. All right? The reference and then the verse, please. Proverbs 1, 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. Or some of the modern translations have, make your paths straight. And I ask you some questions in the introduction. What Christian doesn't love these verses? I have heard old men quote these verses. I have heard high school girls quote these verses. I've heard moms quote these verses. Dads quote these verses. I hear men who are looking for employment quote these verses. I've heard children looking for direction quote these verses. I mean, everybody, it seems, loves these verses, right? And for good reason. I mean, how many of us have turned to the Lord in the time of decision making and asked the Lord to reveal to you the path to take? Within the last year alone, in talking to individual people, I've asked them, okay, how are you making the decision? And a verse that they'll come back to is this text. They'll say, well, I'm thinking Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. I'll say, well, what does that say? And they'll tell me what the text says. over and again, God's people have returned to this. And I think it is true that the promise which is conveyed in this verse, that He will direct your paths or make your paths straight, they're crooked. And so you would have a tendency to go off the correct path because it's crooked. It's like driving on a crazy mountain road. It's a whole lot easier to drive on an interstate through the state of Nebraska than it is to drive a mountain road in the Appalachian Mountains. Just a lot different. All right, so in order to help me stay on the right road, He's going to make those crooked roads straight. And it's a promise which can carry every believer throughout life. And what is in 5 and 6, for many, many people, is a hope-filled verse, as it should be. Because most people approach this confused about something. I don't know what to do about a relationship. I don't know what to do about a decision that I must make for my family. And as the head of this household, God has given the ultimate responsibility to me with the wonderful assistance and wisdom of my wife to make this decision. And I don't know what decision I should make, but I've got to make a decision. And this verse provides hope. All right? God's going to give me some measure of understanding so that this crooked path right now becomes straight for me. That's hopeful, right? And the hope that is in 5 and 6, though, does not stand there by itself. It's not like the wisdom writer just said, oh yeah, by the way, I remembered something. Let me put this, this is a really good spot to put this in. I'll put it in right here. It builds on the expectation of verses 1 to 4. Let's look at 1 to 4. My son, you'll remember he started this in verse 1, in chapter 1, addressing his offspring, giving him instruction about how it is that he should live. And the way that he lives is called wisdom. If you live it in the correct way, you will live it by wisdom. I'm going to show you how to live this way, and the way of showing you how to live is wisdom. So my son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commandments. And then verse 3, let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. All right. First bullet. When we read these texts, something is taught to us. Look at verse 2. For length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. Verse 4. And so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. First idea, great rewards. I'm not sure what they are yet, but here's what's true. Great rewards await those who embrace wisdom. Like what? Including, but not limited to, long life. That's verse 3. Peace, that's verse 3. High regard, verse 4, before God and people. Those are great rewards. Most people want long life, right? What is implied in long life? How does someone actually get to the point of long life? What are some things that have to be true about them to get to whatever long life is? What has to be true about somebody? Yeah. You got to be healthy. So what's implied in here is some measure of health, right? That's implied in there. It doesn't say that. And remember when we talked about this previously, that the wisdom writer intends for you to see more in the proverb, remember that? Than is actually written. Well, here's one of them, health. All right? But what's another key component if you're going to make it to long life? Okay, there has to be some measure of living that way, all right? So there's going to be assumed that you've already lived a certain amount of years before you get to there. What else is implied?
Well,
Sure, because if you had the same habits as a 35-year-old that you did as a 2-year-old, you probably wouldn't live very long. So there is some change there. What else? What has to happen? Think of how people do not get a long life. What has to happen for people to have a long life? Pardon me? All right, God's favor. I'm not sure what that means, so what does that mean? So if the result of sin is death, and the assumption is that some people die because of the sinful actions of other people or themselves, what is God doing for that person? If it's another person, if someone died because of the sinful actions of another person, you would say that God, when someone lives a long life, that what has God done in relation to that person, another sinful person? What has he done? That was a horrible way to ask a question. He's given you grace. Well, I mean, what did God do? Some people, Jonathan dies in the Old Testament. David lives. What did God do? All right, so there's one. You know, what's implied here is protection. And sometimes it's what sinful people do. I mean, you may have heard on the news this morning that I'm not sure what Northwestern suburb it is, but some guy in a neighborhood has walked into people's house in a neighborhood 2 nights out of the last week. That's crazy. Remember, they took an 8-year-old girl, I think, out of the home, and she screamed or whatever. Her mom called, and he ran away. All right, so if a person's going to make it to long life, because we've all read and know of stories where people don't make it to long life, there's going to have to be God's protection from sinful people. But there also is going to have to be God's protection from what? Do all people die because sinful people attack them? So it might be disease, so we would go back to health. Could be disaster or accidents. Somebody dies in a car accident. Somebody dies in a mountain climbing incident. Somebody dies because they took a wrong medication, thinking they were taking something else. Or a parent mistakenly gave a 2-year-old a medication that a 2-year-old shouldn't have, intending to do the right thing, trying to help relieve the symptoms, but give away. So implied in all of this is the activity of God. That's the point that I'm trying to make. Because no man has a long life simply because he wills it to be that way. Implied in this is long life. Implied in long life are those things. Included but not limited to these rewards, one is peace. Well, who doesn't want that? I mean, who doesn't want to be at peace with people? I mean, do you really want to be in conflict? Now, you say, well, I know people who like to fight. Well, that's different. There's a difference between like the fight and liking conflict. The reason people fight is because they have conflict, right? So to overcome the conflict, they fight. So my premise stands, in my mind anyway, nobody likes conflict. Well, God says, here is a reward that's coming to you, peace. Peace externally, you toward other people. And then there are some people who are at great, great internal calamity, aren't they? You might never know it, but in their minds there is a huge, raging battle going on. And they are anything but peace. And then he says he will give you high regard. Well, who does not want to be thought of well by people? You know, I hear people say a really foolish thing. I don't care what people think. Really. Well, then you are exempt from the human race. Because the reality is we all care what people think. So a wife will say to her husband, what did you think about dinner? And she's concerned that he enjoyed it. I hope it was pleasing to your tastes. But the bigger concern is not whether or not it really met his palate's expectations. She wants to know, what do you think of me as a cook? Right? And men do the same things. So I will go home and I will say to Brenda on a Sunday morning, anyone want to guess what I asked her? That's what she says. She said, oh, did you preach today? I didn't even know you preached today. I'll say, what did you think? What did you think? She said, no, she doesn't say that. She says the same thing every time. I won't tell you what she says. Because I want to know. We all want to know the opinions of people. And we all want to be held in high regard. And the believer should desire to be held in high regard by God. To be found pleasing in His sight. So there are great rewards here. And the reward, second bullet, is contingent on purposeful responses to teaching. I think the blank is purposeful. I'm not sure. The reward is contingent on purposeful responses to teaching. The teaching occurred in chapter 2. That's what we considered last time. Here is someone who brings wisdom before you, and you are to hear it and receive it. And you remember, there are all those 8 verbs that we looked at to open the chapter together. You have a responsibility in listening and gaining knowledge and wisdom. And verse 3, you have a similar kind of thing. He tells you, do not forget my law. Well, that's interesting, because I thought forget was accidental. That's how it comes across for my kids. When they tell me they forgot something, I'm supposed to interpret that it was an accident that they forgot it. And actually, that's what I think you should think about me, too. So if you have an expectation of me, I was supposed to meet you somewhere and I didn't show up, and you call me and say, hey, Pastor, I thought we were going to meet today. And I said, oh, I forgot. What I want you, I'm hoping that you're assuming, is that that was accidental. But what it seems to say here, the scriptures seem to indicate that there is the capacity that exists within me not to forget God's law. I don't have to trip over that accident. Okay, well, how is that going to happen? The second part simply expands the first. Don't forget it, but instead, let your heart keep my commands. And in verse 3, he tells you what to do. He says, bind them around your neck and write them on the tablet of your heart. In other words, internally and externally, do everything that you possibly can to keep your mind remembering the wisdom that was taught to you. And if you will do that, the reward that is here will come your way. So the hope that is in 5 and 6 is built on the expectation of 1 to 4. There are 2 expectations. One of them is that the believer will respond correctly to God's word. 2, that the believer will experience the response of the rewards from God's word. What's in 5 and 6 is built on the expectation of 1 to 4. Does that make sense to you? So let's get to 5 and 6. If you have arrived at verse 4, your life is characterized by letting your heart keep His commands. Your life is characterized by these being bound around your neck and written on your heart. Your life is characterized by that. Then here is the next growth step for you. Verse 5, trust in the Lord. I'm going to assume for the moment that you understand the concept of trusting in the Lord. Without elaborating on it too much, simply this: believing what God says. That's trusting in the Lord. I believe what God says. In simple thoughts. It is interesting what the wisdom writer puts in here. He puts in here almost a kiddie phrase, doesn't he? With all your heart. Do you remember when we used to say that as a kid? When you wanted to convey to somebody how deeply passionate you were about it. And maybe it was when you were 15 and this was your first puppy love experience, which thankfully for you did not lead to a dog's life. You were talking to this girl and you said, I love her with all, this girl about this guy. I love him with all my heart. Or maybe after you got married and on your first anniversary, you wrote that in the anniversary card. I love you with all my heart. And you still do. And even on your last anniversary, you wrote that in there. I love you with all my heart. And you still think that. That phrase, with all my heart, appears about 15 times in the Old Testament. And it's a really interesting study to do that. If you have some Bible software, take that phrase, all your heart, and search that in some Bible software and look and see what comes up. And you'll find they primarily center around a couple of ideas. One is loving the Lord with all your heart. Two is serving the Lord with all your heart. Another one is like this one, trusting the Lord with all your heart. And the simple idea is, it is singular. Singular love. It's singular service. It's singular worship. So, for example, Samuel said to the people of Israel following one of their times of worshiping false idols, repent and worship the Lord with all your heart, he said. It's singular. There can't be mixed worship. You can't say, I'm going to worship God and this. What? It is exclusive. So when you take that same idea and put it in here, there is exclusive trust. That's the idea behind the phrase, trust in the Lord with all your heart. He is not saying about generate inside of you some great emotion that you're going to put forward in the trust. He is telling you there is only one entity in which to trust. Your heart has capacity for only one trust object, and that singular trust object should be the Lord. That's what he means. And when he tells you to trust in the Lord, he really is telling you to trust in what you've already heard. That's a crucial idea. We tend to think about trusting the Lord for what is unknown. And there is truth in that. There's a lot about heaven I don't know anything about. And I'm trusting the Lord that it's all going to be good. But there's an awful lot that I've already been told about. And the big issue for us is not trusting about what we don't know, but about trusting what we do know. That's the big issue. So with deep sincerity, that's the first bullet. Trust what you have heard. And you're going to need to do this, the second bullet, despite what your senses are telling you. Because those will not give credibility to your own conclusions. That's the second part of verse 5. Do not lean on your own understanding. How is our understanding of any given situation developed? Have you ever thought about that? How did I arrive at this conclusion? Whatever that was, it came through a sense for you. So, has your nose ever given you a conclusion about something? You walked in the house and you went, whoa! Because there was a wretched smell in the house. And you drew a conclusion, something's bad somewhere. I gotta go find what that is. Or it was dark and you couldn't see anything. And you walk in a certain part of the house and you touch something, and okay, now you know where you are. You draw a conclusion on it. As long as somebody didn't move the object that you just touched, it's where it's supposed to be, then you're okay. And your eyes give you certain conclusions about things, and your ears do as well, and taste, and I think I covered all of them. All right. What wisdom is telling us is this. Trust in the Lord and do not rely on your senses to tell you what is the right way to go in a certain situation, because they cannot give you credibility, a credible conclusion. They can't do it. And you know that by experience. Do you remember as a kid when your mom would put something before you to eat and it smelled horrible. Remember that? I used to think broccoli had the worst smell in the whole world. I mean, ugh, it's awful. I actually kind of like broccoli right now. My senses deceived me. One sense told me what was untrue according to another sense. Have you ever touched something, not knowing it was hot, touched it, and it didn't feel hot immediately, but shortly after, you knew it was hot because maybe your sense of smell told you something about the heat? So here's the point. What we normally rely on to make decisions, our senses, which feed our brain, which then pull us down a path of conclusions. Wisdom says those senses do not have the capacity to get you in a straight path. That's why airline pilots are told over and over and over and over and over again, trust your instruments. Trust your instruments. They're told again and again and again. Because when you're in a cockpit, you just don't understand it. Have any of you actually flown a fixed-wing aircraft or a helicopter? Anybody actually flown one? I've had occasion to fly both. A friend in Midland took me up in his aircraft. It was a two-seater. I sat in the front. He sat in the back, just like this. In fact, it was an airplane that he built. I was really excited to go over this. And we were flying over a field, and he said to me, okay, your turn. Take the yoke. Well, I've flown a lot of computer airplanes. I can fly these things. And I've always wanted to be a pilot. It's one of the things that's on my list, and maybe someday I'll actually get to do that. So I took the yoke. I got this. This is so hard. And within about a minute, I hear his voice come, you've flown, you didn't raise your hand. She has soloed before. So if you want to know about that, she has soloed before. I took the yoke, and I'm flying, and I hear his voice come in my earpiece, and he tells me, check the altimeter. And the altimeter tells you how far you are off the ground. And I look, and in a minute, I had lost 500 feet of altitude. We were going to die. I was going to kill us, take us right into the ground. My senses told me nothing. I did not know that I had lost 500 feet, but the direction I was going, had I kept going that way, I would have killed us. We would have died. What wisdom is telling you is when you lean on your own understanding, instead of the crooked path becoming straight, it stays crooked and eventually it will bring some kind of damage to you. It may not be death, but it will bring damage to you. Do not lean on your own understanding. Here's a question. How would you know if you're leaning on your own understanding? Because when I talk to people, and they quote this verse to me, and then I start to go through the decision process that they're making, the vast majority of the time, you know what I discover? They're leaning on their own understanding. And we discover that together in the conversation. So how do you know if you're leaning on your own understanding? You know what, Joe? You're exactly right. Because in this proverb, one of the things that Proverbs chapter 3 says is the Lord gives sleep. That's in this proverb, Proverbs chapter 3. Now, is it always true that if someone is tossing and turning in the night, that he is not on the correct path? Absolutely not. Martin Luther, the night that he stood before can't remember his name, but I think he stood before him in Germany. He was up all night praying and asking the Lord for wisdom how to do that. But when you look through this, let's go through these bullets real quick at the bottom. Here is how you can know. Verse 7 says, if you are wise in your own eyes, then you are not trusting in the Lord. These carnal responses to the life, it's like being wise in your own eyes. That's verse 7. It's like dishonoring the Lord with your possessions, verse 9. Dishonoring the Lord with your possessions. Are any of these blank? Some of them are blank? Okay. 3. Like despising the correction of the Lord. Verse 11. Then there's an insert here, verses 13 to 26, which are positive and tell you what it will look like if you are trusting the Lord. And it'll tell you because you're pursuing wisdom by finding wisdom. I'm on the bottom 3. Here is how it looks when you're leaning on your own understanding. It's like withholding good when it is in your capacity to deliver. It's like devising evil against those around you. It's like envying those who live outside the law. So there are at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 ways for me to come back and say, okay, I am in this decision-making process and I want to make the right decision. Am I making the decision based upon my own understanding, or am I making my decision trusting the Lord? Here's a grid. You can look at the grid and say, okay, is this true of me? Am I dishonoring the Lord in my, because this decision has to do with my possessions. Am I dishonoring the Lord by my attitude or my actions in relation to this possession? That's the idea. It's a grid for us. Here's what I want for myself and what I want for my wife and our children and whatever offspring God gives to them and what I want for the people that I know and love, you. I desire for all of us to know experientially what it means to trust in the Lord. And not to lean on our own understanding. To acknowledge Him in such a way that all our paths are made straight. What a great promise for a Christian. I've not studied all of Hinduism. I'd be shocked if you found a promise like that in any Hindu writing. I've not studied much of Islam, but I would be shocked if you found a blank check promise given to the people by that. I'd be shocked by that. It is only God's children who get this. And it's for you. So learn to trust the Lord. All right, our time's gone. It's good to see you. Any quick comments or questions before we go?